We are Rogue Media Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, Chris Gross filling in today, as he's done for many years. And Ed Werder, another convincing win for the Cowboys. They kind of messed around a little bit, but still a runaway win, 33-10, Sir Purr and everybody. That is the mascot, Ed, for the Panthers and everybody. Very sad today. As they get sent home, mostly Cowboys fans there, though. It was a big day for Cowboys fans at that stadium. And Ed Werder, as always, Ed, Jerry keeps this thing interesting. We kind of thought, well, you know, they'll probably, this will be a blowout. It ended up being a blowout. But Jerry shows up with a guest, Jimmy Johnson, who, Ed, you've known for many, many years and covered very closely, was in tow. And was out there with him pregame, and it got everybody thinking, what's this mean? What is it? Why is Jimmy hanging out with Jerry? And sure enough, 15 to 20 minutes before kickoff, there's Jerry holding a news conference at an opposing team's venue to announce that Jerry will go in to the Ring of Honor. And, of course, they timed this up where this could be on national TV as well. You know, Ed, you've covered this tempestuous relationship for many years. You've had a front row seat to it for, oh, all of the last, going on 30 years, obviously, actually a little bit longer than that. Today's announcement was strange, the timing of it, but it's finally happened, and Jimmy will go into the Ring of Honor. What was your first thoughts on when you heard the announcement and then to see Jimmy finally go in after all these years?
Well, my first thought was the question that Jimmy asked on set at the Hall of Fame festivities in 2020 when he was inducted to Jerry. Well, while I'm alive, that question has apparently been answered. Jimmy will go in while he's alive, assuming Jimmy, who survived the show Survivor, can last at least another 6 weeks on the planet. But yeah, I mean, Jimmy and Jerry had 29 years to be able to plan this announcement, one made, as you mentioned, in bizarre circumstances and amid the usual half-truths. It's been 3 years, 10 months, and 7 days since Jimmy's emotional acceptance speech at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Jones now voting him, the one-man voting committee, putting him in the Ring of Honor, the second coach in franchise history to Tom Landry. And as you mentioned, like, the Cowboys completely disrespected the Panthers before the game even started. Like, they're playing a home game in the Panthers stadium. And before they do that, hey, we want to use your facility to make this major franchise announcement that could have happened any time in the last 30 years, that Jimmy Johnson's belatedly going into the Ring of Honor in the next 6 weeks. But yeah, I mean, they endured a strained relationship for decades after their partnership dissolved, you know, immediately after the Cowboys won back-to-back Super Bowls in 1994. And, you know, in what became the most significant news story that I ever covered, we all remember an enraged Jerry Jones disparaged Jimmy Johnson, diminished his importance in public at a bar, at the league owner meetings in 1994. Obviously wrongly claimed that 500 coaches could win championships with the talented roster that Jerry was paying. And then they announced a week later that Jimmy was leaving the organization, Jones paying him some, you know, going away present in the millions. The next day, Jerry replaces Jimmy with Barry Switzer, who had never coached in the NFL and was at the opposite end of the coaching spectrum. You know, the thing that strikes me about this is all the time this could have happened beforehand. And it was no sure thing that these two guys would survive into their 80s to experience this moment together. And, you know, there were times earlier where Jerry promised Jimmy he was going to induct him into the Ring of Honor, to the point that he said, Marilyn, who is now deceased, Marilyn, love, my personal assistant, will call you tomorrow to make the travel arrangements. And then instead, the next day, Jimmy heard from Jerry further delaying the proceedings and claiming, you know, at one point he didn't want it to conflict with Jimmy going into the Hall of Fame, he wanted that event to stand on its own. And I don't know, the sense I got from it the whole time was Jerry enjoyed not paying Jimmy the ultimate football tribute, that he loved controlling this one thing that Jimmy Johnson as a coach could not achieve without Jerry granting it to him. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
And so as you remember, when we were out in training camp a few years ago, we talked to Darren Woodson, and he and Troy Aikman have been very open about the fact that while they did win a Super Bowl, you know, with Barry Switzer after Jimmy left, they felt like they were cheated out of many Super Bowl titles. You know, Troy going so far as to say, what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick did together, Jimmy and I could have done together had the two of them and their egos allowed that to happen. And, you know, alas, it didn't. But at least Jimmy, on December 30th, in a game the Cowboys will play at home against the Lions, he'll be paid proper tribute to his career as a two-time Super Bowl winning coach of the Cowboys, and a guy who, what's the number? Coached 10 different players to a combined 22 Pro Bowls in 5 years. Five of his players became Hall of Famers. Troy Aikman, Larry Allen, Charles Haley, Michael Irvin, and Emmitt Smith.
Wow. It is remarkable. And as only Jerry could, I mean, you know, they're both, for guys that are now in their 80s, extremely sharp. Sometimes a little harder to tell with Jerry, but Jerry's still pretty nimble. But he did say that Jimmy would be going into the Ring of Honor in 1923, to which Jimmy kind of caught on to that and corrected him. And Jerry on national TV said, what did I say? Jimmy had to tell him, well, you said 1923.
So, well, this reminds of the mistake he made in inducting DeMarcus Ware into the Ring of Honor just a couple of weeks ago when he called him DeMarcus Lawrence. So let's hope that Jerry will practice and say Jimmy Johnson's name correct. What if he puts Barry Switzer in instead of Jimmy?
I've often said, how will we ever know if Jerry's slipping a little bit? It is the Doomsday Podcast. Chris Gross, our old friend, please play the music. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast. We are off and rolling, and Cowboys take care of business on the road. Ed, this week, I got a kick out of hearing Frank Reich, the Panthers coach, who reasserted himself as the play caller going into this week's game.
For the 187 yards they got today against Dan Quinn's defense, the 7 sacks they allowed, the pick 6 by Deron Bland. The good thing he was calling the plays, and their second best play caller was not involved.
Yes, and I always love it too when they say, this is not a statement on whoever was calling the plays. This is no knock on him. I just feel like I need to do this. And so I'm sure whoever he took the play calling away from felt
Thomas
fine
Brown,
about it.
Thomas Brown, the offensive coordinator, got to call plays for 3 consecutive games.
he just couldn't find the rhythm had to get it back to Frank. And the Panthers, it did feel like an enormous moment when they actually cut the game to 17-10. I mean, Ed, not that we truly thought that they were back in the game, but on paper, at least on the scoreboard, they were. And all it took was like 3 fourth down conversions, Cowboys running into the kicker to let them go for it on a 4th and 2. And then they were able to go down there and get it to 17-10. God love poor Bryce Young. I mean, I agree with some of what I heard on TV. I mean, yeah, I mean, the evaluation you would have on Bryce Young at this point is not good, but also who does he have around him? I mean, like, if he's not throwing to Thielen, who is he throwing to? There's somebody named Trimble out there running some routes for him. I think I saw another number, like a 15 or somebody, but they've got nobody. I mean, I like that running back, but they don't even, you know, they did run the ball on the Cowboys some, but yeah, this is not Cowboys did what they needed to do against an overwhelmed team, and it maybe just took a little bit longer than we thought it would, but it ended with a resounding pick six for the great Daron Bland, who, Ed, if I know you, you're going to bring every stat ever known to man around that fourth pick six of this season. I can see you looking down at your notes now.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, from an overall standpoint, you know, this one of the things we always criticized Jason Garrett for was his teams had this tendency to play down to the level of the competition. And Mike McCarthy's Cowboys have not done that, especially not this year. They have run out of the building, even usually their own building at AT&T Stadium, but in this case, a building that they borrowed for the day, rented out for the day, apparently. But you know, this game felt like it was one of the biggest talent disparities of any matchup in the league this season. You don't very often see a team like the Cowboys favored by double digits on the road. It's happened very few times this year. It happened when the Cowboys lost at Arizona, as misfortune would have it for them, but they're now 7-1 against opponents with losing records. And the Panthers, of course, at 1-9 have the worst record in the entire NFL. I think it's great for, you know, you're on a short week, second week in a row. You know, Cooper Rush is able to finish the game for Dak Prescott, who was not sacked again for the second consecutive weeks. Cowboys winning easily their sixth victory by 20 or more points, the most for the franchise since 1978. Micah Parsons has his first 3-sack game. But yeah, Daron Bland, to me, is the story of the day. Yet again, ties the NFL record for pick sixes with 4 on the year. He's a 4th player ever to do it in league history. He still has 7 games to play. He has 6 interceptions a season. And so he's tied with Eric Allen in 1993, Ken Houston in 1971, and Jim Kearney in 1972, the only players to have 4 pick sixes in a single NFL season. In fact, his 4 defensive touchdowns, Matt, are more than any other team has this year. Among Cowboys players, only CeeDee Lamb with 6 has scored more touchdowns than Daron Bland, a corner. Pretty remarkable. I mean, second year, you know, led the NFL. He's led the NFL in interceptions since 2022. That was his 11th today. We all remember shifted from slot corner to start outside when Trayvon Diggs suffered a season-ending injury. And what he's accomplished in minimizing the loss of Diggs, I think, is really among the most important developments for the Cowboys all year. I mean, you know, when Diggs went out, Mike McCarthy said, this was the best I'd ever seen him, talking about Diggs. And then he said, I've never seen anyone like him in terms of his playmaking ball skills. He called him off the chart. Never seen anyone like him. And here they come out with a guy who does something that not even Diggs does. You know, intercepts the ball with the same routine, but turns it into touchdowns like he's Deion Sanders. really, really remarkable. I mean, remember in training camp, they paid Diggs big money, a contract extension of, you know, paying him $20 million a year. And now you've got this second year, 5th round pick who's doing everything that Diggs did. And where would they be without Daron Bland is the question I guess I would ask.
Well, I think it's a fair question, and he has been remarkable, and he is, and it's remarkable how many inexperienced and bad quarterbacks the Cowboys have played against this season. I think what you have to do, Ed, in those, and we've talked about it, documented this in the past, you got to take advantage of that, right? And like on that play to come where he came from, it was Deion like to undercut the route. And much like Diggs, everything he gets his hands on, he seems to catch. I mean, think about like Panthers had one chance today, like, or, you know, one or two chances to maybe stay in that game. One was they could have picked off a Dak pass into the end zone, and it went through the guy's hands. And Deron Bland never seems to miss any of these picks.
And he got up off the ground, yeah. Right? He got up off the ground and returns it for a touchdown. And, yes. You know, I mean, Al Harris, I think, is probably a guy who deserves a little time in the spotlight. He's a former cornerback himself, played for McCarthy, you know, in Green Bay. Was the same, a similar type of ball hawking player as we've seen from Diggs. He also, obviously now lending his expertise to Bland, and, you know, saw him, you know, he said when he watched him on tape as they were evaluating him as a draft prospect, that the thing that struck him was how fast he could match outbreaking routes, which is what he did today. And yeah, and you're right too. I mean, I think he scored touchdowns against Daniel Jones, Mac Jones, and the rookie today. So Bryce Young, and who did his other one come against? I guess would be the question. Not Tommy DeVito last week. But anyway, your point's well taken. These are not the most accomplished quarterbacks, but I thought at one point I was going to say the two things that would concern me at the end of this game is we have not seen the Cowboys establish the run like everybody made it clear this week when I was out at the Star. That was their intention. I mean, CeeDee Lamb offered up that, hey, we're going great in the passing game. Time to establish Tony Pollard. Did they do that? I don't know. Maybe he scored his first touchdown since week one on a 21-yard run. But the other thing I would have said is we haven't really seen the defense take over games and score and sack, you know, quarterbacks like we're familiar with. But today, obviously, they did wind up accomplishing all of those things.
Yeah, and Ed, to your point, Micah Parsons seems to – it's like when he has what under – by his standards is an off week, you sort of know he's going to come back with a monster effort. At one point on the broadcast, they said he had 3 sacks today. It may go down officially as 2.5 sacks because it did look like Kearse got in there, I think, to share one with him. But it was still just – it was like the hapless Panthers, like their interior. They had no, I mean, think about that, Ed. You have, if you're preparing for the Cowboys, you have to start with Parsons. You have to build your whole thing around, okay, how do we defend against him? And yet all those stunts, and then when he just simply lined up over the center, he's just flying around guys. He's beating. I mean, one time DeMarcus took on a double team. Like, how could you ever double-team DeMarcus Lawrence with Micah hanging out? And he raced around there and got a sack. He is a one-man wrecking crew. And if you've got kind of a iffy center and then, like, a young guard or something, that's a recipe for disaster. And while everybody else right. is really good, too, I mean, Lawrence had a good day. Sam had a sack. Dorrance beat him one time. You know, they got a ton of practice. At one point, Ed, and I thought you would like this stat, I looked up, and poor Bryce Young had 33 dropbacks, and he had 15 pressures on those 33. So pretty much half of his dropbacks, he had no chance. Yeah,
he went 1 of 5 with 7 sacks and a scramble when he was pressured. In the game, Micah Parsons had a team-high 6 pressures, 3 of which obviously he converted into sacks. He now has 44 pressures on the season. He's the 7th player to record 10 sacks in each of his first 3 NFL seasons, reaching his 10th today. The last to do it was Sean Merriman from 2005 to 2007. The rest of the players on that list are Dwight Freeney, Javon Kearse, Anthony Smith, Derek Thomas, and Reggie White. Those are the only players. And to your point, you know, one of the things, you know, for Bryce Young is that, you know, he's been sacked a lot. Coming into the game, I think it had been 40 times already. And they're going to have that same opportunity next week against Sam Howell on Thanksgiving Day. Washington throws the ball more than anybody in football, and he's been sacked a lot of times as well. But, you know, Micah Parsons isn't just an edge rusher, to your point. You know, he lined up over the Panthers center, Bradley Roseman, multiple times and consistently ran by him. And Dan Quinn's ability to isolate Parsons on, you know, interior offensive linemen really seems to make the whole pass rush more effective. When Micah has a two-way go on a guy, he's almost impossible, I think, to stop. And, you know, he can do it standing up. He can do it from an inside position. He can do it from an edge. He's a very difficult player to match up against. And talking to him out there this week, it was pretty clear that he intended this to be a get right game for him after, you know, again, the game against the Giants was the first one in his career where he didn't have a sack or even a tackle, no stat for Micah Parsons for the first time in his NFL career was a big motivating factor for him going into this game today.
All right, Ed, it is important that we bring people up to speed on Marable Homes, one of our big-time sponsors, timeless classic homes, approachable luxury homes. That's kind of like when I go out to Ed's ranch-style home. It's very approachable to me. Wish Ed would invite me out there more often. These homes are Lake Highlands, Preston Hollow, Park Cities, Lakewood, Forest Hills. Some people say Little Forest Hills, beautiful area of Dallas, Richardson. And then they're being built on Cedar Creek Lake. And this huge tour of homes, Ed, that they have in Lake Highlands, the actual house where Blake Marable and Amy Marable live themselves is now on the tour of homes. If you just want to get a glimpse of one of these Marable homes, reach out to me, DM me or whatever, and I'll make it happen. I'll make it happen, and we'll get you over here and let you look at one. I know the man. I know where he lives. And we'll take you right over there. But Ed, would you agree? Do you have a very approachable luxury home, would you say?
My home's 30 years old, and it was built when I was working for the Dallas Morning News and the legendary sports editor, Dave Smith. So I was not a highly compensated journalist by any measure at the time. So I think it's very modest. It's not a ranch, though. It's a two-story. And we're on a very nice lot, very heavily treed lot. But and you know, to your point, you're welcome to hand deliver my paycheck anytime you want to come over.
Well played, sir. And that'll keep you in that luxury home if I can continue to deliver these checks. That's Marable Homes. That's Marable. Now it is time for something we do on a weekly basis. We'll get the grades. You wait for it. You covet these grades. It's hard to beat up on a team when they beat somebody 33-10 on the road. But I do think maybe the run defense, perhaps there'll be some flaws with this Cowboys team. Did they not like how Thielen kept getting open along the sideline or kept diving to make those catches for Bryce Young? Let's get Glenn Stretch Smith, our former Cowboy scout and coach, on with us in our stretch plays. You watch him Sunday nights on WFAA, the ABC affiliate in Dallas, Fort Worth. And Stretch, always great to have you. Cowboys took care of business. You know, Carolina able to kind of hang around for a little bit and try to get back in this game. It was sealed the way a lot of these things get sealed, right? With Deron Bland with a pick six, the fourth one this season, which ties an NFL record. And now he's got a lot of games to try to set the all-time record himself. Stretch, when you look at this thing, I mean, it's kind of fascinating. It, you know, one or two, it's like, oh, okay, that just happens. Four, I mean, it's like, that's more than that, right? And the fact that he has 11 picks in his first two seasons now, it's pretty remarkable that you lose a guy like Diggs, but then Bland steps up and it has become just a huge playmaker for this defense.
I think any time you have a player who, you know, it's a second year, you know, fifth round draft pick, you know, everybody kind of, you know, okay, he's in there for Diggs and Diggs is hurt. I think the thing that when you watch him play and when you see, I think how he reads and recognizes what's happening, to me, speaks volumes about one, how he's being coached. I mean, you got to think Al Harris is doing a heck of a job coaching that young man. You also got to think, hey, you know, a veteran guy like Stephon Gilmore is helping him. To me, it's the read and the recognition for what is going on that is helping that young man. And when I say read and recognize today, he saw early in the game that really the only way Carolina was having any success throwing the football was with a little bit of the quick game and then being able to run shallow crosses and do those kind of things. And you saw him immediately recognize, hey, the shallow, they're trying to pick me. He runs over the top of, you know, you call it a pick, rub, whatever you want to call it. He runs over the top of that. But then he's got the physical speed to go close that down. And, yes, the ball was a little bit behind. But he was able to shut it down and then cut underneath that shallow to pick the football off. It really speaks of a well-coached young man. I can only say that from the fact that he is feels like a lot of the time he's at the right place at the right time. Now I'm going to go to earlier in the game when he had to come up on a run fit from a slot to that side. And his run fit, he took the correct angle, but he wasn't really sure. He kind of had Chuba Hubbard right there, and he wasn't really sure, and he kind of made Chuba kind of cut inside for about a 9-yard gain. I'm bringing the play up because – to me, it's about read and recognize what is going on. And when you can do that in a very quick fashion, then you're able just to let your athletic ability cut loose and you believe what you see and you believe what's happening with your eyes. Once you have that confidence and once you get that confidence, now all of a sudden you can see it's just a matter of time for him. It's the rattlesnake mentality. It's not if I'm going to bite you, it's when I'm going to decide to bite you. And he saw that today. And you could tell by his stride, by how he was running when he went and undercut that shallow to make that interception. I mean, I think this young man is playing at a really high level. The thing that I like the most, though, again, is the mental side of it and how smart of a football player he is to read and recognize what's going on. And then you have to give a lot of that credit to the coaching staff. And I know we give a lot of credit to Dan Quinn, and obviously he's going to get a lot of the credit, but you also have to give a lot of credit to Al Harris. And I think, you know, his kind of coach on the field and Stephon Gilmore, because there's no question this secondary is well coached. Now, you saw Lewis on the other side. He just doesn't have the stride and the ability to break under that. He read the shallow to the other side. He just couldn't get there. And so, to me, that's what takes a certain level player to a whole nother level, is when they're able to read, recognize, and then they have the athletic ability to go make the play, shut the play down, make the interception. And he had to extend big time to make that interception. He went to the ground, and how quick was he? Bang, he's right back up. He's like a panther. Bang, he's right back up on his feet, and he's going the other direction. That is stuff to me that is practiced and worked on, and you have to give a lot of credit to, you know, Al Harris and the coaching staff and what the Cowboys are doing with that young man.
I like it. I love the I love the Rattlesnake. I've often wanted to go to that Rattlesnake Roundup out in Sweetwater and get involved in that. I feel like I could do some damage out there. Stretch, if you would, look at, I mean, Micah.
Oh, so the next time you have one of those thoughts, I know you're in front of your keyboard, take your right pinky finger and just go up there to the corner and hit the delete key in your mind. Just don't share that.
I mean, I just had to share what you made me think
of. I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes when the doctor hits you across the knee with a damn mallet, you don't have to kick every single time. He didn't hit the right area.
He usually gets it with me. All right. But with Micah Parsons, 2.5 officially. They took it from 3 to 2.5. That's a half sack, that third one there. 2.5 sacks. And I just wanted to kind of ask you, I mean, he's obviously amazing. Last week, he didn't really register on the stat sheet, although probably he caused havoc as well. But boy, this week, it was just constant. And you had a young quarterback, and they lined him up over the center a lot. They still put him outside some. But, I mean, it just when you see that in the kind of chaos that he's creating, what is that? Why do you think? I mean, other than the fact it works like crazy, but what about putting him right there over the center allows him to cause so many issues for these opposing teams? It's not like they haven't done it before, yet it's almost kind of like they had no clue what was coming, and he would end up coming free a lot. What do you feel like Dan Quinn is doing it with Micah that's allowing to him be such an explosive playmaker?
Well, I think, you know, you obviously as a staff, you go in and you look at the film, you hear a scouting report, somebody comes in, gives you an advanced scouting report. But I think they do a great job of again, recognizing the weak link in the offensive line. I mean, let's take Carolina or whoever out of it. If you're going to build a football team, you're building a football team with tackles, with guys that have great ability to kick, guys that can take on that defensive end, and then you get the bigger, more physical guy to play the guard. Then usually the center's the smart guy, not always the most athletic guy, the smart guy. He can point how the defensive shift, and he can point, hey, we're taking the protection here. Hey, the right guard's uncovered. Make sure you dual read this direction. And you see him pointing whoever they're going to take from an offensive line standpoint. But usually the center – your center is not the best athlete. And so what's happening is Dan Quinn is saying, I'm going to take my best pass rusher and I'm going to put it over your weakest link. And it doesn't have to be that he's going to beat him in a one-on-one situation, because sometimes the double team comes that way. But then what Dan Quinn does is he devises a great scheme where they're running some sort of TE stunt. They're running some sort of twist inside. They're slanting that defensive line and bringing him around, ultimately attacking the weak link in the offensive line. That the weak link this week was that left guard for Carolina. He was a rookie. And it took them about, two series to expose that guy. And that's not I'm not beating him down. I'm saying he was – where they were going to attack and who they were going to attack. And I think they do a great job of understanding who that is and then getting that matchup, because Parsons is so quick and he understands how to get his body in very tight creases and get up the field. Now, you can say, well, that's cute and that's great. However, sometimes that – And I'll say this, because I think that Carolina had some success running the football. You go line that guy up in there and they're able to run the ball on you. Now, all of a sudden, your run fits are not as good. And I think Carolina had some success running the ball. And if you had to ding the Cowboys defense, you'd say, hey, they're going to have to clean up their run fits. But what I like is it's normally it's on those passing downs, that third and 5 to 7, you know, plus situation where he gets into that, you know, that three technique, that you know, head up over the nose to the three technique, which is outside eye of the guard to the other side, any of those areas, what you're seeing them do is absolutely expose the weakness of the Carolina offensive line. And that's what they did. He gets the sacks. You know, they bang the quarterback around a little bit. He thinks he's got to get rid of the football early. Boom, he gets rid of it early. He gets a pick six. And now where the football game really should have been probably a 3-3 game at the half, had Carolina not committed some, you know, kind of face mask penalty, gave the Cowboys a first down, a PI. I mean, had they not done that, I mean, they played about as good as they could play being the Carolina Panthers with the Dallas Cowboys toe-to-toe for a half of football. But the problem is you get exposed, and eventually the Dallas defense opens that wound, then they pour salt in that wound, and the next thing, you got six or seven sacks, however many sacks the Cowboys had, you get a pick six. You understand where I'm going with it.
I do. The wound turns really ugly, almost a gangrene at that point, and you just have everything coalescing around that. Now, Stretch, on the other side of the ball, and again, I like that what you said about the run game. That's interesting because I look at these defenses, and if sometimes you can get a little exotic, and maybe some of the fundamentals get thrown off just a little bit. The fortunate, obviously, they're playing the Panthers. You wonder, can they keep rolling? And then as they get ready for that next Eagles game, they have Seattle before that, by the way. And so that's going to be interesting to see if they get on a little bit of a roll. Offensively, Dak was not called upon to throw quite as much. He just didn't need it. Certainly he made plays. I thought the Schoonmaker, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what the passing game did. And then the running game, while it's not, oh, now they can run it, it was pretty impressive to see Pollard cut that one loose and run over some people down there around the goal line. What did you think about the offense, the kind of the good and the bad today?
Well, I mean, again, I think you saw the first – I'm looking at this here. They didn't hand – the Cowboys didn't hand the football off till they went 1, 2, 3, 4 – they ran the hand sweep to Turpin on the fifth play. They ran two of the first eight plays were run plays. They came out. It's almost like they're reverse handicapping it. They're throwing the ball to set up the run a little bit. I thought they did a good job with coming back to the run. And I'm saying, you know, they ran that toss out of a two-back look where the back was able to lead it up in there. He kind of ran that toss. It was really a toss ISO where it feels like, okay, it's going to be toss outside. Then he cuts it north and south and runs it kind of as an ISO look, ran it, hammered it in the end zone. I thought Dowdle did some good things. I was frustrated early in the game because they lined up in a wildcat look a couple times with Dowdle at quarterback. And, you know, maybe they're just giving other teams something to work on. Mm-hmm. It gets a little frustrating when you're watching that because you think, you know, that's a – kind of a wasted play where you should just go up and line up and assault this football team and put them away. But, you know, there's a method to the madness for what Mike McCarthy's doing, and he's putting things out there for other people to have to work on. I like how they kind of bring Turpin in the backfield and act like they're going to run the swing pass to him and threw the screen to the other side one time. It just didn't time out really well. But overall, Dallas offensively is a really good football team. And I thought Carolina defensively, giving them credit, I mean, they lined up and played CD very well. They did some things they needed to do. Now I'll go back to what you said about Schoonmaker. I mean, they ran the motion with the other tight end over. They knew they had developed a tendency that Carolina was checking the coverage to a closed middle. Well, they go to close the middle, and when they do, you know, you got – Ferguson running wide, you got Schoonmaker kind of on a wheel route, you got Schoonmaker running up the seam, and Dak was able to stick the football on there with a really good throw. I also like how Dak is in control of the offense on the second touchdown. They got him in man coverage. He brought the tight end back in. I'm going to show that tonight on Channel 8, and I thought Greg Olsen did a nice job on TV of showing that. They bring the tight end back in. They solid the protection up, knowing they got man coverage, and they got a guy man-to-man CD running it out. He's got no chance to stay with him there. So Dallas is clicking on a lot of good cylinders right now. They beat two football teams that they should beat, and I truly believe that you've got they're a game and a half now behind Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia gets beat tomorrow night. I don't want to get in on here and start predicting things, but Philadelphia will get beat tomorrow night. Then Philadelphia has got Buffalo and then San Francisco before they play the Cowboys again. The Cowboys have Washington Thanksgiving Day followed by Seattle. I do believe that when the Eagles come back in here to play the Cowboys, it'll be for first place in the NFC East. And right now, the guy that, you know, wears a visor in December in Philadelphia, he's a little concerned about the Cowboys. And I promise you that whole team is, because the Cowboys are playing well. And I truly believe that when they come in here for that December date, I think it's going to be for first place in the NFC East. And it's going to be that way because of how well the Cowboys are playing on both sides of football.
Okay. Stretch does not like the visor as we get into November and December in the cold weather months. And I thought you would like, Stretch, today when Terrence Steele, who's caught some heat a little bit in recent weeks, got out on one of those running plays, knocked out two people. Biotis got down the field. I think finally hit a cornerback on one of those plays. You know, that kind of – when you see guys either pull or get downfield and get on some of those blocks, that is when this athleticism of this offensive line can kind of take over. And I think that was that had to be a great feeling for Cowboys fans to see that sort of dominance on the perimeter from a blocking standpoint.
Well, and again, yeah, I think the offensive line did play well. I think this is a good offensive line. I think you're seeing an offensive line that is played together now for multiple weeks. I think they have some sort of a, you know, they've got the combination right with how they practice Tyron, how much he practices because he's so good. I mean, Steele is a really good football player and does a nice job. You know, we got on him a few weeks ago. Don't forget, he was a free agent from Texas Tech. I mean, so, you know, I think he's still kind of coming back from that injury and still learning and getting better. The point I'm making is I do think this offensive line is starting to gel, just like I think the rest of the football team is starting to gel. And the point I made is, you know, the Cowboys, I believe, are starting to play their best football, and they're going to have every opportunity to have a chance to win this NFC East.
I like it. You know, I like what you're saying about that Philadelphia game. You've been pointing to that thing for a while, so we'll keep our eye as the Cowboys have an opportunity to climb back in this race. And I know you'll join me, Stretch, in congratulating Jimmy Johnson into the Ring of Honor, taking his rightful place as having such a huge part of what happened in the 90s. And so
you know what I want to do there, Mosley? I want to congratulate Jerry. And I say that because, you know, there's a lot of bad – you know, there's a lot of bad feelings there, and Jerry's kind of harbored that for a while, but I like how he's kind of let it go. He's kind of gotten a little softer in his age, and so, yes, congratulations, Jimmy. He obviously did what he did with the Cowboys. Congratulations to Jerry Jones, though, for letting bygones be bygones and allowing him to, you know, put him in there, and it was good to see him sitting up in the box up there today and, you know, kind of reminiscing a little bit. And, again, I like the direction of the Cowboys organization. I'll give it in your terms, Mosley. I know you like this when I do this with the Greek alphabet, Alpha to Omega. You got to think this Cowboys organization's getting it done the right way.
Well, I like that. Love the Greek letters when he goes that route. And I pray, as all our listeners do, Stretch, that you never mellow out in your older years, okay? I want you to keep bringing the fire that you bring to the Doomsday Podcast. Thank you, sir. Happy holidays to you.
Hey, same to you. Have a good evening, Mosley.
All right, there he goes.
And man, hey, give a little thanks to our man Chris too. I know he's sitting in tonight and doing a good job. Sometimes you're called, you know, Mosley, sometimes you got to be called off the bench to come into a starter's role, and Chris was able to, you know, he still had those old snap sweatpants on. He was able to rip them off and come in and fill in tonight and produce for us. Pretty good.
Yep, kind of the Deron Bland of this podcast, and he's probably never going to give a spot back to old Steven. Thank you, Stretch. There he goes. Glenn Stretch Smith on Stretch Plays. Here's a quick turnaround. We've got the major Thanksgiving game coming up. The Commanders come to town fresh off a loss to the Giants, these upstart Giants with Tommy DeVito. They lost 31-19. Ed, let's get a couple more quick points before we get into that game. Just on Cowboys offense, CD continues to, you know, make history. He was not, he'd been on this unbelievable train of like three straight games of 150 yards or more and a touchdown. That came to an end because Dak only threw for 189 yards, a couple of touchdowns. So they didn't need Dak. And I wouldn't say like, oh man, the run game is back now, to your point earlier, but I would say that Pollard showed some speed and showed great, you know, that was a great way that he finished that touchdown run. And then Dowdle continues to be a punishing runner. I would say one of the bigger moments of this game when they needed a third down conversion right there at the end of the third quarter, they found Jake Ferguson for 24 yards on a deep out. And the Panthers seemed to focus on CD there. And again, I just think Jake Ferguson, and of course Schoonmaker had the touchdown earlier in this game. When you get the tight ends involved, Ed, that really seems to be when Dak is his most comfortable. And the Cowboys do have at least one very dependable tight end, maybe a couple of them right now.
Yeah, Luke Schoonmaker, their second-round pick after they took Mozzie Smith in the first round, has made a very small contribution to this point. And you're right, Dak Prescott has always been a quarterback, especially in the red zone, who relies heavily on the tight end. And what was it that going into this game, Ferguson had a touchdown catch in three consecutive games, first Cowboys tight end to do that since Jason Witten. And now his streak ends, but now you got Schoonmaker making a contribution with an 18-yard touchdown in the red zone. So that was a significant play, or performance that maybe can grow going forward. As to your point about CeeDee Lamb, yeah, he didn't have the kind of statistical game that we've become so familiar with as he's become a dominant player in the league, but he does now have 25 career touchdowns, and he has them in the exact same number of games, 59 games, as Michael Irvin had at this stage of his career. So that seems like a worthy accomplishment. Anytime you're matching Michael Irvin as a wide receiver in Cowboys history, you're doing well. And then Brandon Aubrey, the rookie kicker, extended his NFL record streak, first player in league history to make 20 consecutive field goals to start a career. So, yeah, a few other notes of that are worth mentioning here, I think.
All right, that's good stuff. Although, hey, let's in all the frivolity and fun, Ed, it was almost missed that Aubrey shanked an extra point. He's now missed two extra points this season. All right, even with all his greatness of all these consecutive field goals, but it is amazing. Brandon Aubrey doing a
still fewer than his predecessor Brett Maher missed in a single game last year. So let's not get too alarmed by that.
he Mahered two extra points this season, but he's been great.
We used to call it Vander jacking it, right?
Yeah, he Vander jacked one. And then he Mahered one. But from a field goal situation, he's been great. And yep. Ed, you'll recall, he was an ACC, all-ACC soccer player there at Notre Dame. Yes, Notre Dame plays in the ACC in other sports. And then Brandon Aubrey became a professional field goal kicker. All right. Ed, before we do our to get everybody ready for Thanksgiving, I did want to mention the Hudson Financial Group, HFG, and Randy Hudson, UNT, University of North Texas alum, founded this company in 1988. And it's a group that focuses on asset protection. Ed, that's something you've been able to do pretty well on your own.
But I try to protect my asset every day.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it gets left out hanging in the wind by me. But you've done a great job of that, dealing with business owners, entrepreneurs, and they just do a great job, people helping you make money, but also protecting it. Any kind of liability situation, well, they do both personal, business, all the insurance ends of this, and just helping people grow their money. And that is a something that all of us enjoy doing, those of us that are able to make just a little bit of it. HudsonFinancialGroup.com. Again, that's HudsonFinancialGroup.com. Go there to find out more information. And they do some of these amazing, like, Cowboys parties where, like, the Manster will show up, Ed Too Tall Jones. They're involved with the Cowboys, and that's kind of a cool thing. All right, Ed, this is a quick turnaround. I mean, you and I, tonight, I believe, is a Sunday evening. I've confirmed Sunday afternoon as we tape this. But, like, on Thanksgiving, you and I will get together again, and we'll probably be out at the Cowboys game. You and I both have to decide if we're committed to that, but I think we both are.
I'm in. Okay. I'm assigned. Okay. I'll be there.
Okay. We will both be there. We'll be in a suite after the game. This is another opportunity for the Cowboys to beat up on a bad team. I don't know if I would call it a bad quarterback, although he's pretty up and down. Sam Howell. Ed, as the Cowboys get ready to try to, they're now 7-3, have a chance to get to 8-3, and then they get to do what everybody loves doing, right? Stay home tomorrow night and, like, root against their rival. And hopefully by not playing and playing, they can get back in this division race in the NFC East. Ed, how do you see this thing kind of playing out this week? As the Cowboys prepare to play on Thanksgiving. And then, by the way, the following Thursday, always interesting, this little two-step you have to do to turn around and get ready to play, you know, on about 3 days rest.
They play Seattle in that Thursday night game after Thanksgiving.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, Washington, obviously, better than – I thought they were better than the Giants, although they lost today. I know, talking to Ron Rivera, the embattled coach who has a new owner to appease there, and Josh Harris, you know, they kind of surrendered their season against the coaching staff's wishes when they, at the trade deadline, moved Chase Young to San Francisco, the edge pass rusher, former, you know, third overall pick from Ohio State, and then Montez Sweat, their other starting defensive end, moved him to the Chicago Bears. And so going into today's game, after they moved two of their best defensive linemen, their best pass rushers, they'd only had one sack. But today they go out and they accumulate 9 sacks against the Giants and Tommy DeVito. But they lose because they turn the ball over 6 times. And Tommy DeVito is the fourth Giants rookie to throw 3 touchdown passes in a game since the 1970 merger. All the others were first round picks. DeVito was undrafted. So just a terrible, terrible performance for the Washington defense and for the offense turning the football over. I know, talking to Rivera during the course of the offseason, that he was really intrigued by Howell, and the player that he talked about and comped him with most often in our conversations was Dak Prescott. He didn't see any reason why he couldn't model himself after Dak and be a strong thrower, a guy who could run the football. But, man, Dak never turned the ball over like Howell does, and he never took sacks like Howell has taken this year. And so I think there's a significant disparity between the two of them in their first full seasons as a starter, Dak as a rookie, and Howell in his second season, this being his first full year as a Washington starter. And they're trying to make a determination on whether they need to go out and draft a quarterback or not. And Howell has led the NFL in virtually every passing category, including attempts, which is a bit of a surprise since they hired Eric Bieniemy to be their offensive coordinator and play caller, and he's a former running back. But they've every game's a throw-a-thon for Washington, so maybe Deron Bland gets a chance to break the record and hold it himself in on Thursday night. So I think there'll be a lot of opportunities for the Cowboys defense to get sacks and to create opportunities for their defensive backs to get interceptions. This should be a big defensive stat game unless Washington just decides to run the ball to protect the score.
Ed, did you see, you being a big country music fan, did you see who's performing on Thanksgiving?
I did. She walked out at the Tennessee Volunteers game yesterday with Peyton Manning, Dolly Parton.
Wow.
Going from singing Rocky Top to performing at halftime of the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game. That's a huge stage.
We've come a long way from that, like, 12-year-old kid they had many years ago, Billy Gilman or something. Like, they brought him out, and his voice hadn't changed yet. And Dolly, to witness history and to be in the presence of a legend, that's going to be great. Ed, we wish your family a happy Thanksgiving as we all gather round the table. And you'll probably have one of those either. You got to be out there probably pretty early, so you'll have a late evening gathering, I would imagine. Is that kind of how y'all do it?
We usually do it on Wednesday. We do it on Wednesday now.
Okay. Yeah.
We've tried a variety of different things depending on my start time on TV. When I was a reporter for the Dallas Morning News, I could just go out, you know, an hour before the kickoff, and so we could have it at lunch, but now we have it the night before. Not that anyone cares when I have it at all. I don't probably need it.
It sounds like Ed's wanting to morning news. If you're listening, he wants to go back to his writing days so he could slide it later.
If I could make my TV paychecks on a writer's game day check-in time, I'd be all for that. Yeah, I'd be for that.
I think you would like to eliminate podcasting as well, and then you would really be happy. All right. Well, Ed, you and Jill have a happy Thanksgiving. Chris Gross doing yeoman's work today and filling in for another Horned Frog, Stephen Simcox, both of them, Ed, enjoying their alma mater, beating up on my alma mater yesterday. The Baylor Bears take a 42-17 loss, and so we're smarting and we're deciding what to do with the future of our program. I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday. We'll talk to you on Thanksgiving evening. For everybody who's been a part of this one, we say thank you, and we will talk to you on Thursday. Good night, everybody.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.